2-0 delivery. Swing and a high fly ball deep left field. Back for Josh Willingham. Track wall. There she goes. A grand slam for Brett Laurie.
And everybody listening remembers that Brett Laurie made his presence felt rather massively in Toronto with that one swing of the bat against the Oakland Athletics back in August. The grand slam heard round the country, let's say. Laurie's second home game as a Blue Jay, and showed the immediate impact as part of leading the Jays to that 8-4 win over Oakland. A tremendous rookie season for Brett Laurie, even though it was only 43 games long. And he joins us now on the Blue Jay A Day pregame show, taking your phone calls at 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell and long distance, 1-888-666-0590. Brett, welcome aboard. Thanks so much for joining us.
No, thank you for having me.
It is a pleasure. You're part of a long list of some of the terrific Blue Jays who've been with us so far this winter, including some of your, obviously, a lot of your buddies, J.P. Arencibia, Ricky Romero. Jose Bautista was here the other day, and today, Jose Bautista, just this hour, winning his second consecutive Hank Aaron Award for most outstanding offensive player in the American League, and I'm sure you'll agree that that's pretty well-deserved.
Yeah, you know, it really is, and it's a tremendous honor just to play with a guy like that. You know, a guy who can, you know, put the ball in the seats like he can, and, you know, hit for average and hit for power and drive guys in. It's very special to be a part of, just because you can pick up little things from him, and, you know, I'm glad he's on my team.
Yeah, and so are the rest of your teammates, and they're also pretty glad that you're on their team. In a little 43-game sample over a couple of months, coming back from a broken hand, going into a broken finger, you had a tremendous impact and a heck of a year. Take me through what it was like, I guess, from... Well, I want to start at the very beginning, because I think back to just under a year ago, I was flying down to the winter meetings, first week of December in Orlando, and who should be sitting beside me but Alex Anthopoulos. And midway through the flight, he turns to me and he says, "What do you think the fans would think if we took a little bit of a step back this year? If we had a chance to solidify the future by giving up some of the present?" And we talked about it back and forth. And then when the plane landed, he turned on the phone and he smiled and he said, "All right, they did it. We just traded Sean Markham for Brett Laurie." And he couldn't have been happier. And, you know, well, tell me what you felt when you heard about that.
I was very excited. You know, I knew that I was definitely up for a trade. I just didn't know who to, and I didn't know when. So I guess it was a waiting game. And then I got the call from my agent at the time and said, you've been traded to the Toronto Blue Jays. And, you know, it was a tremendous honor just to have the ability to play Major League Baseball, but to do it in my home country and be able to do it in front of a bunch of great fans and in such a great country, it's obviously very, very cool for myself.
So you felt like you were on your way out of Milwaukee.
Yeah, I kind of felt like that. I kind of felt like I needed a new home, and I didn't feel like I was at home, and it had been a long time since I felt like I had a lot of people on my side that really wanted me to do well. I knew there was a few, but I didn't feel like I had a whole lot of people on my side, you know?
Yeah, no, I can understand that. And it's funny, because when you did get traded, we heard these stories and, you know, the attitude and the wild kid, and you can't rein him in, and he's got a lot of growing up to do. And then we see you on the first day of spring training. And from the first day of spring training, you're attacking, you're focused, you're enthusiastic, no question about it. But on the field, completely professional, and they loved you from day one in the Blue Jays organization.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, all I wanted to do was just make an impression, and you only get one. So I figured I better do my best to try and turn some heads and, you know, try and get in with the guys and just try and introduce myself and just be a good stand-up guy and a good teammate. And try and be one of those kids who, you know, who's not arrogant and cocky, who just likes to have fun and, you know, want everyone else to succeed and not worry about yourself. And I think I did a very good job of that. And, you know, I got a lot of good teammates now, a lot of good friends on the team. And, you know, I'm in a very good situation.
There's no question. And from all accounts, you did do a fantastic job of that. We're with Brett Laurie, and you didn't make the team, even though John Farrell, I believe, really wanted you on the team. They felt like you had a little bit of developing to do. But an interesting story, midway through your first couple of months in the minor leagues, when Alex Anthopoulos kind of reacted to the suggestion that, you know, you were tearing it up so much in April, you should be up in the bigs. And he said, we've told him that he needs to change his approach, that you need to get deeper in counts and not so much take walks, but make sure that you're swinging at the pitches that you can handle and that it's your approach and not your talent that's leading to your success. And he brought up a number, something like 4 walks against 27 strikeouts in the first month of the season. And then May 1st, they told you to change things. And throughout the month of May, you walked more than you struck out. Your power numbers went up. It seemed as though all they had to do was make a suggestion, and you were able to completely change the way you approached an at-bat. Was it that quick?
It wasn't so much changing my approach. It was pitch recognition. And that's what walking in the game of baseball all has to do with pitch recognition and in the counter end. If you can spit on stuff that, you know, is a good pitch from him, and you can do that, then you are going to walk. It's just the way it's just the way it goes. Because, or you're going to drive something, and especially when you can spit on pitches, you're going to get yourself into counts. Well, now he's spitting on that. Now what do I throw him? And then sure enough, you know, he may throw you a fastball, or he may hang a curveball, and then you can do some damage with it when you spit on stuff that he thinks you're going to swing at. So it was more around the lines of pitch recognition and just trying to, you know, get myself into a count where I could do some damage. But I still kept my same approach. I was still going up there looking to hit the fastball. If he threw me a first pitch fastball, I didn't mind swinging. I didn't mind, you know, letting it eat and seeing what happened, because you only get 3. So if he does give me one, I'm not going to let one go by. And that's, you know, that's kind of, you kind of got to recognize the point of the game you're in. If you're late in the game, maybe you want to take a pitch, try and get some runners on. You know, early in the game, maybe you want to take a few pitches, try to get their starter, you know, throw some more so we can get them out of the game, get into their bullpen. So there's a lot of stuff that goes into it. But for the most part, it was just about kind of pitch recognition and just trying to get myself into a count where I could do the most damage.
And just so people understand a little bit better, when you say spit on a pitch, you mean just look it over, ignore it, and wait for the next one.
Yeah, not swing at it. Just kind of make it look like, you know, you were not even going to come close to swinging at that. So what else do you got?
Right. Something that a reason that guys don't do that a lot of times is sometimes they're afraid that that's the best pitch they're going to get and they're not going to get another one. And there are a lot of guys who are reluctant to get deep in counts, who don't like to hit with 2 strikes. That didn't seem to be an issue for you either.
No, I mean, sometimes I did like hitting with 2 strikes. If I got down to 2 strikes, I would just choke up a little bit, and I would just stay really short, keep my hands inside the ball, and just put the ball in play. And I think, you know, when that started happening, that pitchers, you know, it was tougher to pitch to me with 2 strikes because there was nothing really you could throw. If you threw something in the dirt or high, I wasn't going to swing. So you kind of had to throw something in the vicinity where I was gonna swing. And, you know, when that started happening, I started to get myself into counts where it was in my favor and I was ahead. And then I started to get the pitches where I could handle and obviously do some damage with.
How tough was it for you that last week of May, we all knew you were coming up on Friday. They had hinted very, very broadly at it. And on Tuesday, you get hit on the hand. And though you didn't find out till a week later that it was broken, that set you back. Did you know you were that close to the call-up then?
Oh, I knew I was very close. Yeah, I had a very, very good idea of when I was going to be called up. But, you know, it was just one of those bumps in the road that, you know, everything happens for a reason. And, you know, I'm a better man for it because, you know, you learn a lot when, you know, you're by yourself and, you know, you just kind of got to suck it up and just know that it's a bump in the road. And you build a lot of self-confidence when things aren't going well and you're by yourself and you have a lot of time to think. And that was just a good opportunity for me to just kind of sit back, you know, and analyze what was going on and what was ahead of me. So, you know, it ended up getting better, and, you know, I am where I am right now, so I'm very thankful.
And then the last bump in the road, the broken finger the last week of the season, I remember you and Butter walked by me in the middle of batting practice down through the tunnel, and I thought, well, something's got to be up. And then Butter comes back out shaking his head and going, this is great turf. I love this turf. This is wonderful turf. And I thought, all right, well, Brett's got a little problem then. Is it all good now, or are we still, you're still healing, or how's it working?
Yeah, it's all healed. I went and saw the doctor, and, you know, everything's all healed. So it's pretty much back to 100%. So, yeah, we're moving on.
All right. Sounds terrific. You got all the broken bones out of the way in your first year. So that's a good thing. A lot of guys waiting on the line to talk to Brett Laurie, so let's get right to it. We have one, maybe two lines open, 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell. Long distance is 1-888-666-0590. It is the Blue Jay A Day pregame show ahead of Game 5 of the World Series. Josh is in Toronto. Josh, you're going to lead things off. Say hello to Brett Laurie.
Brett, how you doing?
Good, man. What's going on?
Congratulations on the start of a very long, successful career with the Toronto Blue Jays.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
I was at that Oakland game where you hit that grand slam, and it was pretty epic. I think definitely one of the more memorable Blue Jay games I've been to, and I've been to lots of games, so congratulations.
Well, it's funny you say that, because it seems like every person I talk to in Toronto or on the street or in a restaurant or something says, I was at that grand slam game. So when I add up all the people that have said they were at my game, it seems like there should have been a full stadium, so it's pretty funny.
Well, next grand slam you hit, there will be one for you. How's that?
All right.
A quick question for you. You know, you play the game the right way. You play hard, play with a lot of a passion, a lot of emotion. And, you know, being a Canadian, I like to think, you know, he grew up watching hockey and he has hockey player blood. But, you know, where do you get that attitude, or, you know, sort of that grindy, head down game that has gotten you where you are today? Where does that come from?
I think it's just something that I've always had, something that I've always had with me and in sport. Anytime I had an opportunity to compete against people, it was my understanding to myself that I had to win. There was no question or any thought that they were going to win. It was all about my team and how we were going to do whatever it takes to win, and how I can do whatever I can do to contribute to the team and try and help. It doesn't matter if I'm 0-4 or 4-4. As long as I can do something, one thing in that game that helps contribute to the win, then I've done my job. And it's just always something that's been inside of me, that when the bell rings and we're in between the lines and the game's on, then it's game on and let's play and we'll see who's the better man at the end. And some days you win and some days you don't, but, you know, most of the time you're always grinding for a win and just trying to help your teammates. So it's just always something that I've had, and I just love winning.
And we hope you never lose it. And by the way, 19,541 at Rogers Center that day. So you've probably run into about 18,000 of them.
Yeah, pretty close. I think so. Yeah, pretty close.
All right, with Brett Laurie, Brad is in Kitchener. Brad, you're on with Brett.
Hi. Confidence is such a big part of hitting. How much will it help you when you start seeing pitchers for the second time, the third time?
It's gonna be good, just because, well, not only that, we have video and we have stuff, and I now have a feel of what, you know, guys throw and what their tendencies are and stuff like that. So I'm glad I've had the opportunity to have my feet wet in the big leagues and got to see a number of starters that I'm going to be facing next year and stuff like that. So, you know, I'm very excited, and I'm glad I had the opportunity to see most of my competition.
Who has more of an advantage the first time? Is it you've never seen the pitcher before, or the pitcher who's never seen you before?
I don't know. I mean, it's a toss-up. Anything can happen. This game's a funny game. And, you know, just right when you think you have everything right, that's when everything goes wrong. So it's kind of that balance where, you know, you don't know. You know, you've seen video on it, but you've never seen them live. So you can never compare video to a live game. You just can't do it. So, I mean, I guess it's a coin toss. It's heads or tails between the two of us. So it's just baseball.
We're with Brett Laurie, and it is, and that's the best attitude to have, see ball, hit ball. We're taking your phone calls ahead of Game 5 of the World Series. Let's go to Jason in Cambridge. Jason, say hello to Brett.
Hi, Brett. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, man. How are you?
Not too bad. I'm wondering about, you guys touched on, or at least Brett did, specifically about recognizing pitches. So what was the biggest adjustment for you going from facing Triple-A pitching to Major League pitching? I mean, I think I've heard you say in an interview before about the sharpness of the breaking ball. Was that the biggest adjustment that you had to make?
You know what? When you get to the big leagues, you know, everything's different, just because everything's different but the game. Like, the stadium's bigger, there's more fans, there's more, there's TV cameras, there's a lot more action going on outside, but when the game's on, the game's on. So when I got there, it wasn't a huge adjustment for me to take pitches because I was already coming off my AAA, and I just, next day I was in the big league. So it just went from baseball to baseball, and it's just the lights are a little bit better. So, I mean, I could see the ball. I could see the ball a little bit better. So I think it actually helped me when I got to the big leagues because I could see the ball a little bit better. You know, there is those times where you do swing at the odd bad one. I mean, everyone does it. But for the most part, I think just, you know, when I got to the big leagues and just not worrying about all that other stuff and just worrying about baseball and worrying about, you know, myself and my teammates and, you know, going out there and trying to do my job, that's when, you know, I started to work counts and spit on pitches and take stuff up in the zone and grind with two strikes and not worry about if I'm at two strikes. If I'm at two strikes, put the ball in play. If there's a guy in second, do your job, get him over, and just do the little things. And, you know, I've really focused on that. And, you know, yeah, that's pretty much it.
And, you know, once you can do that, then you can move on to that next level. And I remember talking to you about a series in New York where you were taking shots at the short porch in right field. And you got to do all that other stuff first and be comfortable with that before you can start to, I guess, strategically play towards the ballpark that you're in.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's just baseball. You just got to play the game. You can't worry about the stadium and the fences and the players and who's pitching against you. Oh, there's Derek Jeter at shortstop. All that stuff's irrelevant. Those are guys that you've watched growing up. And now you get the opportunity to play against the best. And all I ever wanted for myself is to play against the best and compete against the best. And now I have that opportunity, and that's what gets me so fired up, is that I've finally now gotten myself into a position where I can compete against the best and really see where I stack up against these guys. And that's what really gets me going. And the fact that we have an opportunity to play Major League Baseball every day against, you know, the New York Yankees and Boston Red Sox and all these teams with so much history, and the Jays have a lot of history too. And to be able to do that is very, very, very cool, and I'm very thankful for where I am in my life. It came with a lot of hard work, and, you know, hopefully I'm here for a while because I'm going to work my butt off.
Sounds good to us. So before we step away for a second, I just want to pass along a question from the Twitter, and I saw Ricky Romero chirping you about this yesterday, I think. Saliba1983 wants to know, what were you thinking right before you hit Jason Veritek, and how did you feel afterwards?
Right before, I knew that it was infield in, so I was going on contact, and it was just one of those plays where, you know, if there is a ground ball hit and I'm going right on the swing on contact, that, you know, there may be a decision at home plate whether if I got a slide, depending on where the throw is, how quick the throw gets there, how much time I have. So, I mean, what a lot of catchers do, and he's very good. He's very, very good, and that's why he's been in the game for so long. He's their captain, and he's a leader of that team. And I have the utmost respect for him. He's been around the game a lot longer than I have, almost probably longer than I've been alive. So it was just one of those things where it was an indecision. He likes to – a lot of catchers are very sneaky, so they can show you the plate, and then right at the last second they'll drop a knee or they'll do something to block the plate where you slide, and they totally just knock you out of the way. So it was one of those things in my mind right now. He's pretty crafty. He's a veteran guy. He kind of knows what he likes to do. Sure enough, little ground ball hit. And then, you know, I just had to make it – I had to make a decision, you know, split, whether it was going to be – I actually made the decision before the ball was even hit. It was already in my head that if it was a little ground ball and there was any indecision in what I was going to do, that I had to go after him. And it was just one of those plays, and everybody understands that it was a clean play. And when we did it, I collided knees with him at home plate. When I came in, my front foot was facing forward and my back leg was sideways, and I collided knees with him, and that kind of stirred something up, but it was nothing too serious. It was just a game off, and then I was back in there.
Yeah, absolutely. And a fun play, and absolutely a clean play. And that's what you got to do when the catcher's got the ball well ahead of time. And it didn't work that time, but I'm sure it'll work plenty of times as we go forward. We're going to step away for a second, but Brett Laurie will be with us for one more segment to take your phone calls at 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell, long distance, 1-888-666-0590. It is the Blue Jay A Day pregame show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Brett Redding's the bat. Awaits the 1-1 offering. Drives one deep left center field.
Yes, sir, that ball is up, and yes, sir, there's that walk-off hit. Brett Laurie disappears into a sea of teammates at home plate. He's won it, 1-0.
Nothing like a little Labor Day matinee at the ballpark, and in the bottom of the 11th inning, Brett Laurie walked it off against Dan Wheeler, leading off that inning, if I remember correctly, and I don't as I look at it now, with two out in that inning, and it was a 1-0 final, the Blue Jays over the Red Sox. That was home run number 8 on the season for Laurie. He would hit one more before breaking the finger and ending the season on the disabled list. Brett is with us taking your phone calls on the Blue Jay Day pregame show as we get you set for Game 5 of the World Series. Chris Carpenter, CJ Wilson, Cardinals and Rangers are tied at 2 games apiece. And Brett, when you and I talked at the end of the season, you said that was the big one for you. That was the your great memory of this season, that walk-off home run against the Red Sox.
That was one of the moments in my life where I will never forget, just because the stage it was, and I've never hit a walk-off hit in my whole minor league career. I've never hit a walk-off base hit, walk, or a fly ball or anything. And to be able to do it against the Boston Red Sox in, what was the 11th or 10th inning? The 11th inning?
Yep. Two out in the 11th.
Yeah, 2 out in the 11th. And just to be able to do that on that stage and with two outs and to get a pitch that I could handle and help my teammates win. That was the big thing, just help my team win. And, you know, it was very special just because you dream about those things. Those are things that you dream about when you're little. Wow, you know, maybe when I grow up, if I could hit a walk-off home run, that would be the coolest thing ever. And then when you do it, it really sinks in, and it's just, oh, it brings tears to my eyes when I think about it. It's cool.
And you got some serious air on the way into home plate there.
Oh, yeah, I was fired up. When I was coming in, I was like, oh, I'm going to get up. And I was just so fired up. You know, my teammates crowded around home plate for me, and that was it was a lot of fun.
Well, with Brett Laurie, and the second segment means a lot less of me and a lot more of you, so give us a call, and you can hit me up on Twitter as well, and I will pass along your questions to Brett Laurie, who you can follow on Twitter at BLaurie13. Brett, how long do you think it's going to take until people stop calling you Lowry?
I don't know. It may take a little bit, but it is Laurie, but it doesn't really matter. I respond to both.
All right, let's get back to the phones. We go to Gord in Brantford. Gord, you're on with Brett.
Hey, Mike. Hey, rookie. This is fine, man. Thanks, guys. Brett, my major sports involvement is with ladies softball. And when your first day up with the big club, I emailed all my contacts and said, Danielle's kid brother is with the Jays. I'm sure that as you grew up, you'd be nearer at the top of your age group in baseball, especially in BC. But I imagine there was quite a while when you were known as the kid brother of one of Canada's top minor lady softball players and then top softball pitchers in college and university ball in the States and even internationally. And I noticed that Danielle and your folks were in Seattle for the great series there. Can you talk a little bit, please, about softball and baseball in your family and the role of your parents and siblings in the development of yourself and Danielle?
Yeah, sure. You know, it started at a young age. Myself and my sister both grew up playing sport, and you know, I played baseball for as long as I can remember, and I played soccer for a long, long time as well. I played soccer. I still like playing soccer. Played basketball in high school. Even before that, I played basketball a long time, but I never played hockey or anything. And my sister, she played basketball. She came first in the province 2 times back to back. So, you know, we both grew up playing other sports, and I think that's what's made us so good at what we do now. And she plays professional softball, and you know, I play professional baseball. So I think playing other sports and doing that sort of thing and keeping our athleticism above par and doing other sports and doing different motions and stuff like that kind of got us to where, you know, where we are today, or at least it's helped us along the way. You know, me and my sister growing up, we were very competitive. We would always do little things around the house. My dad would always make us do little competitions, whether it's a race to this or when we used to go to the field. You know, whoever hit more home runs would get a Slurpee, and we would both get a Slurpee at the end of the day. But it was the competition. It was the point of competing and, you know, wanting to win and compete against your siblings. So that's kind of the way we grew up, and I guess it just stuck with us. You know, she signed with the University of Washington at a high school. Big softball deal, full ride. She could have gone anywhere she wanted. And, you know, she grew up. She played a little bit of baseball before. She played on Team BC and stuff like that. But softball kind of took over when, you know, there's kind of not much baseball for girls. But softball kind of took over, you know, close to her senior year, mid-senior year. And then she just skyrocketed from there. She went to University of Washington, and she has a national championship under her belt. She's set amazing amount of records. Strikeout, all-time Pac-10 strikeout leader, and she's just done so many great things for the sport, and she's a true ambassador to the sport of softball. And you know, it's a shame to see that it's not in the Olympics, because I really want her to have that opportunity to go back there, because I really do think that she does deserve it for how hard she's worked, and to have that cut from her life, knowing that she can't go back to the Olympics, even though there is talk about it coming back in, you know, in the near future, but not this one in London, but in the near future. So I do really hope for that, that she can have that opportunity, because we both have had the opportunity to go to Beijing together, which is very, very cool. My mom and dad were there, and it was a time I will never forget. And, you know, it's just exciting, because we both get to see each other's lives and how we are developing as people and as brother and sister. And, you know, I'm going my way right now, and she's going her way. She plays professionally for a team called the Florida Pride and stuff like that. So she's the head of that. She's got a lot of good things going for her right now, and I'm very, very happy for her. And she's just living her life to the fullest of what it could be, and I'm just very, very happy for her. And, you know, I'm glad that I get the opportunity to do what I can do, because she gets to come out and watch me play now. And she came to Boston and saw me play. They were in Seattle, and she's come to Toronto as well. So I'm just very, very thankful that I can have the opportunity to have my sister compete at such a high level, but at the same time come watch and support me in what I do. So, you know, we've had our battles before. We always compete, and by the end of the day, we always love each other. And, you know, that's the way it's always been, and I'm sure that's always the way it's going to be. So that's kind of the little story on me and my sister right there. And, you know, we love each other at the end of the day. And, you know, my dad always says we're the fighting Lorries, and we love hard and we fight hard and we play hard. So that's the way it is. And, you know, that's me and my sister for you.
That sounds pretty awesome. We are with Brett Lorrie. And you talk about her career at the University of Washington, and there are those who say she's the greatest collegiate softball player that's ever played. You were a mid-first round pick, and you had to know that you were going to be a very high pick. Was college ever a thought for you, or?
Yeah, college was a thought. I did sign at ASU. I was scheduled to go to ASU if the draft didn't work out in my favor, but I was fortunate enough to get myself into a position where I didn't need to go to school, and I could get my career underway at a young age.
Yeah, pretty amazing. You would be a junior in college right now instead.
Yeah, I know, huh?
You made the right call.
Yeah, I think I did too.
Well, Julius is in Mississauga. Julius, you're up next with Brett Lorrie.
Good evening, Brett and Mike. How are you guys doing?
We're good. Go ahead.
I was just wondering, Brett, do you ever keep track of your bats in terms of, like, pit selection and things like that? That you could...
Can you repeat that for me? I couldn't really hear you. Say that again.
Yeah, do you have a book? Do you keep notes on your at-bats?
Do I keep notes? No, I don't keep a book, and I don't keep notes just because there's so many other things for us. Like, we have our computers in the back that have everything, like have every pitch, every video, every ball thrown, every pitch you've taken, every pitch you've hit, every pitch you've swung at. So it kind of takes a little less stress off yourself to have to write everything down and stuff like that. So it's good because I can go back there and I can analyze myself, and I can see from a side angle, I can see from straight on. And so they kind of lay it out pretty smooth for us. So it's a lot better than having to write stuff down, I think.
Yeah, you don't need to keep a book anymore if you've got an iPad, I think.
Yeah, I know, huh?
Mike in Hamilton. Mike, you're on with Brett Lorrie.
Hi, how you doing, Brad? Congratulations on your year so far. My question that I had to ask for you is, earlier in the summer, we were watching that Little League World Series, and the Canadian kids did really good. They had a little biography on each of the kids, and I was expecting a whole lot of Jose Bautista kids there, but there was so much Brett Lorrie love going on that team. Now, we're from Southern Ontario, so probably we don't get the same picture, but you've got an awful lot on your shoulders with these kids really admiring you. How are you going to handle that one?
You know, I'm just going to take it as it is, because I know when I was that age, I looked up to, you know, I looked up to all the guys in the big leagues. I loved watching Derek Jeter. I loved watching those guys, Justin Morneau, Joey Votto, Russell Martin, and all these guys, and Jason Bay, and all these guys in the big leagues just doing what they do. And, you know, it made me want to get there. And I know when they look at me and they see what I do at such a young age that they want to get there too, because I know I was there too. I've been to the Cal Ripken World Series when I was 11, and they just went to the Little League World Series, an even bigger stage. So they know what it's about, and they watch baseball on TV, and I'm sure they've seen a couple games of mine. So to have them be able to acknowledge myself as one of their favorite players is pretty cool. I know there was a few Jose Bautistas in there too. So, no, it was that's a first for me, having say, you know, I'm their favorite player. So that was pretty cool. But, you know, I'm just going to take it as it is and, you know, play the game hard and just try and set a good example for young guys and just let them know that, you know, chase your dreams and, you know, work hard and have fun.
Only have a few minutes left with Brett Laurie, so I'm going to try to get to as many of your calls as we can. Cameron is in Kitchener. Cameron, go ahead.
Hey, Brett, I just wanted to tell you, you are a beast, man. It is exciting to see you play because you bring so much energy to that ball club. And just a quick story. I don't have a question, but my father-in-law bought his first jersey this year, a Jays jersey. And so he decided to put a name on the back. And just so you know, he put your name on the back. So I'm excited to see what you're going to do in the future, and hopefully it continues in 2012. Thanks a lot.
Awesome, man. Thank you very much for your call.
There's a lot of Brett Laurie love out there. There's no question about it. He should have waited a little bit to buy the jersey, I think, though, because there's going to be a new one coming up. Back to the Twitter for a second, and a couple of people want to know, are you going to be taking part in the winter tour this off season? Last year, I think they hit Halifax, Calgary, and Vancouver.
Yeah, I think I believe I'm going to. I'm not too sure. I haven't got all the details on it, but I think it is in my best interest to do it. I think it would be a lot of fun, and you know, it'll be a good opportunity for me to travel around Canada and, you know, see what's going on.
Yeah, it'll be a blast. Hopefully they can get it back up to what it used to be in the 80s, 70s and 80s with the great winter caravan that always came around with Tom Cheek at the head of that. That was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Marty is in Aurora. Marty, you're up with Brett.
Hey, gentlemen. Hey, Brett. And two quick things and a question. First of all, I just wanted to thank Brett for bringing back the enthusiasm and the fun for baseball in Toronto. I mean, I've had a chance to watch him only on TV, but even in the dugout, always, you know, cheering people on and seems to be giving everyone the pat on the shoulder, and it just seems to rub off on everybody. And my question is, and thanks to Mike for having these shows, is I did some reading about you, Brett, and I was just wondering what is your natural position? A lot of things I read on the internet did not say exactly what your natural position is, and I was just wondering what it is.
I was never brought up as a player who played one position. When I was little, I played a bunch. I played center field. I played shortstop. I played third base. I pitched. I caught. I did a bunch of things, and as I grew up, that was kind of the way it stayed. But I was always good enough to where I could play that position and not be told, well, you're not really good enough to play that position. I could always play each of those positions at a high level. And then when I got to professional baseball, you know, I caught for the first little bit. And, I kind of looked at myself and I said, you know what? I don't think this is in my best interest. I don't think this is my quickest way to the big leagues. And I don't think this is for me. I think I need to go a different route. So, you know, sure enough, you know, I would talk to the Brewers and, second base seemed like it was going to be a fit for me. So played second base my whole first two seasons. I did ask to play third base in my double-A season. I did ask to play. They said they wouldn't let me, even though I know that I could. I took ground balls there in batting practice and stuff like that. I knew I could play the position. It wasn't a question of that. It was they wouldn't give me the opportunity. You know, they couldn't give me that opportunity to, and I wanted to. So they said I had to work on it in the spring training. So I said, whatever. And sure enough, that offseason, I got traded, and you know, then third base was my spot. So it's actually kind of ironic when you think about it that I asked to get the opportunity to play there, and I never got that, and now I'm in the big leagues with the team I got traded to playing third base. So you know, it is pretty special, and you know, I am very versatile. I can still play other positions for sure, but I think third base is going to be a lock for me, and hopefully it's going to be a position of mine for many years to come.
And when you were on Team Canada, the World Baseball Classic, they listed you as an outfielder. I can't remember if you played any defense. I know you pinch ran in one of those.
Yeah, that's all I got to do. I only got the pinch run.
You would have played against Venezuela if they'd gotten that far.
Yeah, I know.
I'm confident. But next time, believe me, there's going to be rather a larger role.
For will be in there, I hope. We'll see.
Hope so. Sydney is in Hamilton. Sydney, say hello to Brett Laurie.
Hey, Brett. I just wanted to say I'm a huge fan, and it's really great to see you representing Canada the way you do with the Jays.
Thank you.
I wanted to know what your pregame ritual is.
My pregame ritual. I usually get to the field around the same time. Me and JP wake up. We usually toss on some country music, some CNT, and then we kind of relax. And then, you know, if we want to get a quick bite to eat before the field, or we can eat at the field. Sometimes we switch it up. It doesn't really matter. But most of the time I get to the field, I kind of just relax and just kind of get changed slowly and, you know, just kind of prepare for the day. I like to go get a quick snack in the kitchen or, you know, I have early hitting that I do. I take my swings before batting practice and stuff like that. But right before the game, usually I'll have a Red Bull, maybe two, depending on, you know, what time of day it is and how I'm feeling and, that sort of thing. So usually before the game, I like to, get the music going in the clubhouse with all the guys. I like to turn on a thing we got called DJ Private Ryan. It's like this thing that no one through our clubhouse that we like to rock out to. So we get that playing, and I just like to get everyone going. I like to get all the guys going. I like to get Lindy going. I like to get Hosey going. I like to get everyone going before myself, so I know that the games we're going to be ready when the bell rings and stuff like that. But I like usually right before the game, I like to take a Red Bull, and I like to go sit in the sauna in my full uniform, in my cleats. I like to go sit in the sauna for about, I'll say, 10 minutes and just kind of stretch my pants out, get a quick stretching in there, and, you know, kind of get ready for the game. And, you know, that's kind of what I do.
I like that you like to get some of those guys fired up. When you mention Adam Lind, I mean, he's a guy who's pretty calm, pretty quiet. And I think of Lind and I think of Colby Rasmus as two guys who, even if they were really fired up.
I always get those guys going because those two are the most laid-back guys I've ever seen. Like, they're both laid back, and at any chance I can get to get those two going, I know we're going to be a better team for it, because I know we're good when they're quiet, but I know how much better we can be when they're fired up. So that's kind of my goal before the game and, you know, pretty much for the years, to get those guys going every day.
How can you actually tell if those two are fired up?
Well, I can tell because we're always talking, we're always laughing, we're always doing stuff. You know, when we're all sitting there, and no one's saying a word, that, you know, no one's fired up. So before the game, everyone's getting their handshakes going. Me and Lindy got our handshake. Me and Rasmus got our handshake. Me and Batista. Me and JP, you know, we all got these handshakes. And everyone's just going before the game. You know, I'll do funny things in the dugout. I'll let a guy take a cup of water, and I'll let him just throw it as hard as he can in my face to get me going. I'll take like a smelling salt, and I'll sniff the whole thing to myself. You know, the smelling salts that wake you up when you're almost dead?
Yeah.
Well, I take one of those, and I can just sniff the whole thing. I don't know how. Or sometimes I've sniffed water before just to kind of get me going, to get the boys going. Everyone's laughing. Everyone's having a good time. And then, you know, the game's on. So those are just little things that I take pride in myself, just because I know that I can get the boys going and anything I can do for my teammates, because those guys, I know they do the same thing for me. And, you know, we're a big family, and it's a long year, and we know we're going to be there together. So we might as well make it one another comfortable and, you know, just be a big family. So it's very cool in that aspect. And I just like to get everyone going.
We're with Brett Laurie here, and Brett, a couple of people have asked, and I don't know how much you know about it. I don't know how much you care until it's an actual story, but the whole rumors about the Red Sox being interested in John Farrell as their manager. John spoke today, and he said he has no comment because he has no idea what's going on. He hasn't heard anything about it. He's concentrating on the Blue Jays for next year. Have you heard about this story, and does it make an impact on you yet?
You know what? I have not heard about this story. I think that was the first time I have heard about it.
Oh, there was a report in the Boston Globe.
John was a great manager for us. It was his first year. You know, he didn't really know what he was going up against. He had a bunch of new guys that, you know, he was the general of, and he was gonna, you know, he was running the show. So I thought he did a very good job. He's a great manager. He's great with the guys. Makes smart decisions, and he knows the game. He knows it from a pitching standpoint. He knows it from a player standpoint. Little plays, just little things, and just. He's just a great manager. He's just a great guy. He's just a great guy to be around, and I'm very thankful. And I hope that he's there for a number of years, because I know we have a great thing going right now. And I know if he's there with us, that you know, we're going to do some fun things together. So, you know, I haven't really heard anything about it, so I'm not going to comment on it. But I do hope he's there with us for many years to come, because he's a great guy, great coach, and a good friend of mine.
All All right, there you go. A vote of confidence, no question, for John Farrell from Brett Laurie. We are just about out of time. And again, thank you so much. For you were terrific dealing with the callers and answering their questions. And the tradition here on the Blue Jay Day pregame show is to look stuff up and give you a statistic that you might not have known about what happened this year for you, and something that you'll like. And what's really interesting, I find, in looking at the kind of the little things for you, is that your batting average went up this year, although you didn't, your slugging percentage went down, but it was just a matter of putting the ball in play. Your batting average went up with how many outs there were. When there was nobody out, you hit .268. When there was one out, you hit .293. When there were two outs, you hit .314. And that shows me a little bit of maybe extra concentration and focus when there's less of a chance to make something happen in the inning when time's running away. But the two things that really jump out at me is when you look at your on-base plus slugging in the way it moves when the game matters. In the lowest leverage situation, your OPS is .877. When it's medium leverage, .902. High leverage, the tough spots, .1300. And when you hit in a game that was tied, and it happened 34 times in 43 games, you came to the plate in a tie game, you hit .483 with an on-base over .500 and a slugging percentage of .1310. So you really did seem to be able to rise to the occasion.
Wow, I didn't know that stat, and that's a very good stat to have. You know, thank you very much for telling me that stat. But, no, it's one of those things I have prided myself in because, you know, a lot of times in the minors, I'm not going to lie, everyone gets down on themselves in the minor leagues. It's just the way it goes. You know, you're not in the best situation. You're stuck in a place where no fans and the weather sucks and it's way too hot and no one's there to watch you play and nobody cares how you do. And, you know, sure, everyone wants to win. Everyone wants to win the championship. But, you know, it's just not the big leagues. And those are your guys that, sure, your teammates at the time, but they're not your distant. They're not your real teammates. They're not your family. So you just, it's hard because you do get down on yourself. And for myself, I really prided myself on this year into never giving that bat away. If I strike out or if I do something wrong or if I get out, that at bat's gone, that bat's out the window. I'm going to step up again, going to see what I can do to help the team, and we'll see what happens. And then the next, and if I have a bad game, I go 0-for-4, boom. I know there's a next game. I know there's tomorrow. Wake up, come to the park, and let's get after it. So I really did pride myself on never getting in a bat away and trying to put the ball in play and really trying to help the team. And I thought that if I did all three of those things and combined them all and do them to the best of my ability, that we were going to be successful. And, you know, I thought I contributed as much as I can. And, you know, I'm glad that I got myself an opportunity where I can do some damage and, you know, help the ball team.
All right, I got one more thing for you that I just noticed. You hit 9 home runs this year. 7 of them came when the game was tied, which blows me away just looking at that. That's an amazing thing.
Yeah, you know, I don't really check that sort of stuff, but that's a very interesting stat, and it's pretty cool.
Very cool. Brett, thank you so much for your time. We look forward to getting spring training going already and starting this thing again because it does seem like it's going to be a lot of fun watching the Blue Jays. Have a great winter, and we'll see you this spring in Dunedin.
Thank you very much. I'm already ready for spring training. I already got a Red Bull in my car, and, you know, I'm already ready for spring, so I'll see you guys down there.
We expected nothing less. Thank you very much. There he is, Brett Laurie of your Toronto Blue Jays, bringing the heat on the Blue Jay A Day pregame show. It is the Sportsnet Radio Network.